The Cold Omaha Podcast Network.
Brandon Warren coming at you live for another episode of Midwest Swing. You know, I said, live. I'm live right now, of course, but
right. We're
not going to be live. This is a podcast. I'm kind of an idiot. But this is Midwest Swing, part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network. You can find us on Twitter at Midwest Swing. You can find the network on Twitter at Cold Omaha MN. I want to thank you for joining us and for however you joined us, whether it was iTunes, Libsyn, Stitcher, Google Play. If you are catching us on iTunes, please, please, please feel free to give us a review. If you like the show, if you don't, let us know on Twitter via DM. My DMs at Brandon_Warren are open all the time. So if you find yourself not enjoying the program, I would love to hear what you think we can do differently. Within reason, I guess, but you can't hand out Twins tickets every week or anything like that, at least not at this point. But it is a very, very exciting show coming at you today. Taking a break from the Mike Berardino train. He's in the harbor right now chasing down Brian Dozier rumors. We're going to do our part to fan the flames a little bit here locally in the Twin Cities. We have one of our favorite Dodgers writers on the phone, Dustin Nosler of Dodgers Digest. Dustin, how's it going?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
I appreciate you coming on. I've known Dustin here for, about a year and a half, I think, since we met in Arizona as part of the Fangraphs trip. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that was two spring trainings ago.
Yeah, so I had a good time, had a lot of fun, got to meet a lot of new people. Dustin was one of those people, took in a game.
Is he a Lego figurine?
Yeah, he is a Lego figurine on Twitter, Dustin Nosler, Nosler. In real life, I can confirm he is not. Dustin, were you part of the group that went to the second game before everyone went for the airport? It would have been the game with the bees?
No, it went to the first game at Salt River with, I think it was the A's and Diamondbacks.
Okay, we did, yep, that's right. We did Tempe Diablo just before I flew out. And I know that, the prospect guy, Dan Farnsworth, drove. And there were a bunch of other people on that as well. David Weirs, I know for sure, and David Temple, because we were all flying at a similar time in a similar area. And so we saw the game that was delayed by bees. I know,
right.
Hilarious. At Tempe Diablo, Mike Trout hit a home run, and, you know, real fun time was had by all. But spring training is a fun time, and, you know, in our neck of the woods, it's a welcome respite to the weather that's going on, which is starting right now. It's actually chilly.
Blustery,
and no snow yet, but we've been fortunate in the Midwest. There has been a ton of snow all around us, and so anyway, We got Dustin here. He's calling from, I'm sure, a very warm area out west.
Well, I'm in Northern California, and it's probably the coldest day of the year so far. It's probably only going to be about 50 degrees, which is probably really balmy. It sounds like it to you guys.
Yeah, you know, yesterday was in the 40s. It's in the 20s today. So
yeah,
we would take the 50s, that's for sure.
I was going to ask real quick. It says you're out of Stockton, California?
Yeah, that's where I live.
So how did you become a Dodgers writer? Isn't that Giants territory?
Ooh, yeah. Good stuff. Tom went to Santa Clara.
I went to school with Barry Enright. If you've heard of Barry Enright, I went with his brother, his younger brother.
I know Barry Enright. I've heard of Barry Enright.
Yeah.
But he went with he knew J.R. Graham from school,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, exactly.
Former Braves prospect who actually ended up joining the Twins for a while.
Yeah, real briefly.
I don't know where he's at now. His Yankee system.
Yeah.
That was the last I had heard. But interesting. So you wound up covering the Dodgers. Have you always been in Stockton?
No. I lived in this greater Sacramento area, though, for most of my life. Mm-hmm. My grandfather was born in Southern California, so my dad was a Dodger fan. So
rite of passage.
It's really a boring story, honestly.
Well, mine was I watched the Twins games with my grandma, and so again, you know, not one of those passionate live and die by the Brooklyn Dodgers kind of stories, but we all have our fandom that we wear on our sleeves, and it's who we are. You guys have a really fun thing going on at Dodger Digest where you guys write something and get like 1,000 comments every single time. I got something like 5 comments on my last article about Brian Dozier, which you were so kind to retweet. Thank you very much for that. And the community, I was not aware of the community prior to writing my first Dozier piece, which was just identifying teams. And I did identify some players the Twins might target. This last piece you know, to people who are into the business of counting clicks, might accuse me of doing just that and doubling down on a popular subject. But I did try to hone in on some of the players I might target. Let's just say if I were Thad Levine or if I were Derek Falvey. Clearly I'm not, or I wouldn't be sitting here with you guys. But if that were the case, I went into specifics. Again, you don't have to write things that are necessarily factual to get eyeballs on them, but I do appreciate you sharing it as well. The first, though, time that I wrote, the people were the commenters at your site were very complimentary of me. I have to brag that I wasn't absolutely insane for what I asked for, so I have to say I appreciate that.
Yeah, it's quite the community. The thousands of comments are usually the norm. I'd say maybe 10% of them are actually about the topic at hand.
I noticed that too.
Music and movies and politics before I have to delete the comments because we try not to do politics because that just gets out of hand.
Can I ask you, what is WanGate? I didn't figure that out. Can you go on a podcast and explain it without needing the bleep button?
Yeah. No, it's so there's one of these commenters, he's a kid. I can't tell if he's 17, 18, or 19 or something like that.
Oh, gosh.
He's, you know, fresh face, college freshman type kid, and he just posts some really dumb stuff.
We've all been there.
Kind of stream of consciousness.
I'm glad Twitter didn't exist when I was that age, to be honest with you.
Yeah. And so he made a comment. I'm blanking on exactly what the comment was, but he deleted it. And then he claimed he didn't delete it, and one of our moderators showed the back door of who deleted the comment and said he deleted it. So naturally somebody put the gate on the end of it, and then you have one gate.
Oh, and so it's not something about, like, Juan Uribe, you know, sad Juan Uribe. So it's not – okay, I thought there was something nefarious going on here. I still like the idea of the community busting the guy's chops a little bit. But
that's what it is. That's 90% of – the comment section there is everybody busting on each other.
Well, and that's the great part of being a sports fan, you know, in a community like that. Well, so, we're kind of dancing around the topic at hand, and we'll get to it in just a second here. What has been your assessment of the Dodgers offseason so far? Again, the big move so far, I think, probably is the Rich Hill deal, and frankly, the number of players who have declared, number and quantity and quality of players who have declared free agency from the Dodgers this offseason. How have you assessed the offseason so far, and what is your vision for the rest of it? There's a lot going on out there.
Yeah, so far so good. I mean, it was kind of slow leading up because of the collective bargaining agreement.
Sure, yeah, that affected everybody.
Right, there were a couple of minor trades. Howie Kendrick went to the Phillies. Carlos Ruiz went to the Mariners, basically for spare parts, guys who could be designated for assignment when they need a 40-man roster spot, which they will because they're full up right now at 40. Mm-hmm. Love the Rich Hill deal. Rich Hill deal. That's kind of hard to say.
Sure.
It's hard not to like getting a guy who has posted elite numbers, albeit in a limited number of innings over the last two seasons, for $16 million a year. I mean, he was worth 3.8 WAR. Fangraphs WAR last season, mm-hmm. in his 110 innings. So if you can get 20 starts out of him, he'll be well worth the contract, even more than worth the contract. And as he showed in the playoffs against the Cubs, he shut him out for six innings. He's the 1A or 1B to Clayton Kershaw, kind of along the lines of Zach Greinke, who people were bemoaning that the Dodgers didn't pay $34 million a year to keep last season.
Yeah, I was going to ask if you guys miss him out there at all.
I mean, it's hard not to because he gave the Dodgers three really good years, and he mm-hmm. seemed like the prototypical fit for this current front office. Mm-hmm. I think he would have been better outside of Arizona because that ballpark is not great for him. He regressed a little bit, but I think if he were to get out of Arizona, he'd still be fine. He'd still be a really good pitcher. He may not be what he was a couple of years ago. I'd be lying if I said I wouldn't like to have him back. But at the same time, I don't think they're too keen on paying many guys $25 million a year.
Did you think Rich Hill would get more money than he did, either in terms of average annual value or the total value of the contract?
I thought because the starting pitching market is so weak this off season that he might get a shorter deal, maybe 2 years and closer to $20 million annual average value.
Yeah, I could see that too.
And I think I did an off season math or plan or whatever you want to call it, and I think I gave him the Manny contract, the Manny Ramirez contract, 245 with a third-year option at 15, which would have made it essentially a three-year, $60 million deal.
You could call that the Andrew Jones contract, too. I think you went the positive route instead of the negative route.
We try not to talk about him around here.
So, sorry, not to interrupt you. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, that was a disaster contract. But, you know, he'll sign 3 for $48 million, and you take that all day, every day.
And I'm certain I know the answer to this, but of the remaining free agents who have declared from the Dodgers, who are you most optimistic of retaining? And I'm certain it's the Heath Slater lookalike that plays third base, but you know, I got to hear from the source himself what your optimism level is for either of him why is the pitch Kenley Jansen? I almost said Kenley Vargas because of Kenny Vargas here. Kenley Jansen, yeah. What's your level of optimism? Either of those guys come back?
I'm pretty optimistic at this point that Turner is going to resign.
Mm-hmm.
Heard a report that he might resign for a little less than maybe expected because the obvious landing points are not there. But you never know. There could be a team that swoops in at the last minute and gives him, you know, $18, $19, $20 million a year for 4 or 5 years. And he says, adios, Dodgers.
Not an insane contract either. You know, it is the best on the dirt position player on the market. You know, left or frankly, probably outright, I would say.
Yeah, after Yoenis Cespedes resigned with the Mets, yeah, he's probably next in line. Not as confident with Jansen, especially with the Marlins, of all teams, poking around and saying they're going to offer him big money.
Well, who doesn't want a one-year vacation in Miami? We've all been there. I've never been to Miami, so I'd be lying.
Orlando's as close as I've gotten.
Me too. Me too. But yeah, so probably not too optimistic about that.
I mean, if I had to put odds on it, maybe 20% at this rate. But, mm-hmm. I mean, you know, maybe the Nationals step up. If they end up trading for Chris Sale, maybe they'll go try to replace Mark Melancon by signing Kenley Jansen. We'll see. But I put out a Twitter poll back late October just for my followers, and I put it in one of the articles I wrote. And 63% of people said they'd rather re-sign Kenley Jansen than Justin Turner.
That blows my mind.
Yeah, that was – I mean, it's a really difficult, you know, debate when you come down to it. But at the same time, you know, it's a closer who's going to throw, you know, 60 games, maybe 70 innings a season versus an everyday third baseman coming off almost 5-plus win season.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, the only thing that's complicating things is that Turner's already going to be 32 years old. So, but, I mean, if he were, you know, 2 or 3 years younger, it'd be a no-brainer.
Now, there isn't an obvious fit to close on the roster should Kenley move on. You know, Pedro Baez has the numbers, but I know I say has the numbers because keep in mind I look at this Twins bullpen, and so I see how that bullpen is constructed, and I look at Baez and think, oh, the numbers aren't bad. Then I keep an eye on how you guys perceive him and how he's viewed as not only the human rain delay on the mound, but you know, maybe his blow-ups are in big spots. You know, maybe he pitches lower leverage innings and does better there. But I just don't feel like, and I'm sure you would concur, there's a natural fit for a new closer. So at that point, you start thinking about, you know, probably not Chapman if you're not ponying up the money there, but naturally you probably move on to someone like Wade Davis. You know, what's your sense for what they want to do in the closer's role? Because if you build a team as costly, you can't really leave the back end vulnerable. We've seen that with the Giants, you know, fairly costly team. Detroit in recent years, you know, as much as we in the statistical community don't love how much closers get paid, there is value in shoring up your back end.
Yeah, absolutely. Just real quick on Pedro Baez, I'm probably not the best source to talk to because I've not really cared for him ever since he debuted in 2014. I don't know why. Honestly, I do not. It doesn't jive with me. His whole skill set doesn't jive with me.
Sure.
You know, he's inconsistent with his off-speed stuff. I mean, one day he'll show a great slider, one day he'll show a great changeup, and then he'll never throw them again. He'll keep throwing fastballs, and then Matt Holliday gets him in the playoffs.
Yikes.
You know, he gives up a ton of home runs. His command inside the strike zone is iffy at best. I mean, you know, control, command, different things. He can throw strikes, but he has a hard time putting the pitch exactly where he wants it, despite his seemingly decent walk rate. So I would not feel comfortable with him being the Dodgers closer. I'd rather actually see Grant Dayton in that spot if they're going internally. But if they're going to go outside the org, you said Wade Davis, that's definitely a potential fit, especially since he's on a one-year deal. Kansas City is probably looking to move some of their guys because of the new CBA that might impact how they want to give qualifying offers next offseason. Mm-hmm. A guy I think would be a good fit, and he had a little bit of a step back this season, but I still think he's going to be all right, is David Robertson from the White Sox. I think he'd be a pretty logical fit, and I don't know, maybe there's a deal to be made with Yasiel Puig.
Well, they have to tear down the White Sox. If they trade Chris Sale, and I still feel like they will. First of all, they haven't been able to build around Sale, and there's no rumors of them trying to. So to me, that insinuates that they're going to move on from Chris Sale. And if you do that, you tear it down to the studs. I even trade Quintana because he is Cole Hamels on a poor man's deal, and you can get a ton for a guy like that. You could easily turn that into a top farm system. And I realize I'm talking to a guy who covers the team with the premier farm system in the game. You could turn that system into one that rivals the Dodgers with the trades of Quintana and Sale, let alone Abreu, Frazier, Eaton. You know, there's a lot of pieces to part out. And then Robertson as well, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I mean, Robertson probably doesn't bring back as much. Frazier, I mean, he's got a lot of power, but I've not been super impressed with him overall when the Dodgers actually traded for him last offseason.
Well, it would make more sense to do it now, though, rather than at the trade deadline, I think, just because...
Oh, yeah, no,
yeah,
sure,
there's
sure.
No, there's there, for me, the other thing with Dozier, and we'll get to Dozier because the Dodgers have the obvious fit, with an infielder at third or second base, I feel like teams get where they're going with the guys they have already and are not in an obvious go-get-a-second-baseman situation in July very often. I think third base is a pretty similar deal.
Yeah, it's better to trade them because you get the team acquiring just extra control, for at least a half season if you don't wait till the trade deadline.
Plus the qualifying offer they can offer at that point too, which is
right, exactly.
An added incentive.
The White Sox really, honestly, if they want to go the kind of the route of the Cubs and blow everything up and start all over and rebuild that way, they need to do it. And trading guys like Sale, that seems like a foregone conclusion. You said Frazier, Robertson, Melky Cabrera, guys like that. Also, I mean, you said Quintana and Jose Abreu. There's arguments to be made on both sides whether to, trade them and get the most value you can for them, or stick around because people need to see some of these guys at the ballpark. They want to, fill the stands, but you they'd probably be better off blowing it all up, kind of Astros Cubs style.
I'd commit to the suck. I wonder if the Padres are doing something like that this year, where they are literally tearing it to the studs. And it's going to be interesting to see how that pans out because they've got nice players. We had Josh Kuznick on 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago now, the agent for Carlos Asuaje. They've got some really nice young players, whether it's Manuel Margot or Margot, I'm not sure how you say that, and all the prospects they got for Kimbrel. There's some interesting players there. I like Corey Spangenberg quite a bit, but it's a lot of unproven talent.
Yeah, and the Padres are going to be a team to watch, I think, going forward. They've gotten rid of a lot of their – not even like dead weight, but some of their veteran guys, and they non-tendered Tyson Ross because obviously his arm is destroyed. They wouldn't have done that if not. But they've rebuilt that farm system really quickly after trying to go for it in AJ Preller's first year. And just a side note, Logan White, he's one of my favorite executives, and he's there, and he's doing a really good job with their draft the last couple of seasons. I kind of wish the Dodgers still had him.
Does your gut say that the Dodgers could go after Yanhervis Solarte to play second base if they deemed the price on Dozier to be too high?
Yeah, I think so. I think he fits better at third base. He had a pretty solid season last year.
Mm-hmm.
But he's versatile. He can play first even, but that's not really a concern with Adrian Gonzalez in town.
The Bellinger cat coming up, too. He's going to be all right. We'll get to him in
Bellinger.
A second.
Yeah, he's my guy. But I think they could go with Solarte. He's probably about league average, and at best at second base, which is fine. It'd be an upgrade of what they had last season.
Yeah, he came up playing second base in the Twin system, incidentally.
Yeah, he's played mostly third since he's been traded to the Padres in the Chase Headley deal a couple of years ago. And he's been about league average there too. I mean, you're not going to get Adrian Beltre type defense there. You're not going to get Joe Morgan type defense at second base.
Sure.
But with the offense that he provides, he'd be a solid replacement at either position if Turner, for whatever reason, doesn't re-sign. If the Dodgers can't come to a deal with the Twins for Dozier or the Tigers for Kinsler or somebody like that, because there's not a ton of spots on the Dodgers roster that you can upgrade really easily, and it seems second base might be the best one. And they got a little exposed in the playoffs by the Cubs.
Yeah, well, it's hard not to. That was an incredible team, and it was amazing to me that Cleveland took them to seven games. So, you know, we've danced around the subject, I'm sure, enough. We got about 5 or 6 more minutes with you here. What is your gut say on a Dozier deal? What is your hope that the parameters are? Because, you know, part of me thinks, you know, Yasiel Puig could be a good change of scenery candidate. You know, I think De Leon would be a great fit for the Twins. You know, at the risk of getting grabby, you know, obviously Bellinger could play left until Joe Mauer moves on and then play first base. You know, Alvarez is a consideration. Sheffield, is it Bueller or Beeler? I don't know how you say that one.
Bueller, like Ferris.
Okay, and then Lux. The prospects that don't really get brought up are Verdugo and Willie Calhoun. You know, if the Twins are moving Dozier, it would be to move Polanco to second base, most likely. And there are some questions from Keith Law, maybe less so from you, about if Calhoun has the body type to stick at second base. But, you know, that's just the names that haven't come up as much. What does a deal look like for you? How about most accommodating to what you'd like, and then what you'd be willing to begrudgingly give in order to get, you know, a reasonably well-priced Dozier who may not hit 40 home runs again, but is a pretty good defender. That was a battle I had on Twitter the other day, who has really good power and pretty good discipline.
Yeah, just on Dozier real quick, I mean, yeah, he may not ever hit 40 home runs again, but he has shown an ability to hit for power. Mm-hmm. He's had an above-average isolated power his entire career, basically. So, you know, you may not get 40 home runs, but you're going to get maybe 20, 25 home runs and close to 40 doubles out of your second baseman. That's amazing. But as for the package, I mean, yeah, De Leon and Yasiel Puig seem like the obvious fits. I mean, you get a Puig's under control for 3 more years. De Leon's still got 6 years of control. He made his debut last season. He's still one of the top prospects in the Dodgers organization in terms of pitching.
He looks to me like a slightly better version of Jose Berríos.
Yeah, and they're both from Puerto Rico, so there's that.
Mm-hmm. Which is a nice connection. I mean, you know, the young guys like those connections, at least to make them comfortable in the big leagues as far as the acclimation process.
And if you want more on that, Yasiel Puig, when he got demoted to AAA, he and Jose De Leon really hit it off. I think they had before in spring training, too, but since they were both in the same clubhouse, they you know, sharing photos on Instagram and stuff like that with each other. So,
interesting.
I mean, they could be a really natural fit to have both of those guys and maybe even a third piece. I mean, I'd be willing to go. I don't think I'd be willing to include Bellinger or Alvarez. Bellinger, because I think he's the best prospect in the org, and that power, I really like power.
Well, it's the natural fit, too, to replace Adrian Gonzalez, who I think is 35 right now, or going to be 35?
Yeah, he's 34, 35. He's going to be he's got 2 years left on his deal, but like you said, Bellinger could come up next season and play any of the outfield spots, really, but more likely a corner spot.
Mm-hmm.
But he has dabbled in center field in the minors, and he actually had him on my podcast last year, or I guess technically earlier this year, and he said that he actually started out as a center fielder when he was playing in high school. So,
center fielder, that's incredible.
Yeah, and then he's moved to first base since, and he's major league ready defensively at first base already, and he has been for a couple of years, so... I just, with Gonzalez ready to move on here in the next couple of years, I'd be hard pressed to see the Dodgers trading Bellinger, even for a guy like Dozier. But and as for Alvarez, they've got $32 million invested in him.
Yeah, I keep coming back to that.
Yeah, it doesn't mean he's untradeable or untouchable in the right deal. I don't know if they'd be willing to move him here. They'd probably be more willing to move guys like you mentioned, Walker Buehler, Gavin Lux, even Alex Verdugo or Willie Calhoun. But if you're looking for what I would like to see, I'd like to see Puig and De Leon, maybe a third piece, maybe like a Gavin Lux.
Are you just done with Puig? I mean, are people in Los Angeles done with Puig?
I'm not so much done with him as resigned to the fact that the front office is done with him.
Sure.
I love Yasiel Puig. I know he gets a bum rap a lot. He's not nearly the evil villain that people make him out to be. At the same time, he hasn't done as much. He hasn't put in as much work in terms of injury prevention and working out.
Sure.
And he's too bulky. I mean, the report just came out yesterday on Monday that the Dodgers want him to try to shed some of his bulk to get him back to where he was.
Dude needs to do some yoga or Pilates.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, Southern California was a better place to do it.
Right.
You know, I would not. I'm not trying to get rid of him, but I'm not going to be surprised if and when he's traded, especially with all the stuff with his demotion last season.
So you're being a used car salesman, basically, right?
I mean, if he's the Dodgers starting right fielder next season, I'm not going to be upset, but I'd be surprised if he was, just because I think he's kind of run his course with this front office. And when I say that, I think mostly Stan Kasten, who's been around since 2012 when they took over from Frank McCourt. You mentioned to me a guy you might like to see is Trace Thompson.
I was going to close with that too.
Yeah, young veteran guy, maybe young veteran guy. He's technically still a prospect in Andrew Tolles. I think Willie Calhoun would be a really good fit in the AL. I don't think he can stick at second base long term.
Mm-hmm.
Jeff Kent did it for many years, but he also, produced all world offensive numbers from that position. But if he has to move to DH, that's fine. His value kind of drops, I think, if he has to move to corner outfield and mostly left field. So he's almost a guy without a position, but he can hit, and he's got legitimate power for a guy who's listed at 5'9", and that's a little generous. So,
but he could run the risk of being a Vogelbach type, all bat but no spot.
Yeah, but I think he's a little better off than that, because Vogelbach's basically – relegated to first base or maybe left field. I mean, you could put Willie Calhoun at second base.
Sure.
He's going to be probably toward the bottom of the defensive metrics, but he'll, be a league average offensive producer, if not a little better. And the funny thing about him is he hits for a lot of power. He walks a decent amount. He doesn't strike out that much for a guy.
That's a pretty nice approach.
Yeah. It's really interesting from a guy like that. So,
Well,
Walker Buehler would be a nice get too. I mean, he's a high ceiling pitching prospect coming off TJ after the Dodgers drafted him. So, I mean, any of those guys would be great. I could see it. I think at least three players going the Twins' way if Dozier does end up coming the Dodgers' way.
Well, and I could see too. Maybe moving Puig to Kansas City if Kansas City needs a right fielder, especially if they move Kane or Dyson or both. The last thing I got for you, maybe a deal makes sense with two pitchers. And Tolles or Trace Thompson or a pitcher and an infielder, a pitcher like De Leon, an infielder like Lux and Tolles or Trace Thompson. There's a lot of combinations / permutations that make sense. I think there's a chance to get a deal done.
Yeah, the fit is really obvious, and it makes too much sense almost for it to not happen. I'd be okay if it were De Leon, Puig, and Lux. I mean,
that'd be a great deal for the Twins, too.
That would be. And the rule of thumb, basically, is if both teams hate the trade proposal, you're on the right track. I don't necessarily hate that, and it doesn't sound like you would hate that, so maybe we're on the right track.
No, I think it'd be great. You can do hate-hate, or you can do love-love. Either one.
Yeah, it works. And, it's not like the Dodgers are getting a slouch at second base. You're getting a guy, Dozier's almost a 6-win player, right?
He's a stud. He's a stud, and the fans will adore him. He is great in the clubhouse, great in the community, great in the barber's chair. Everything you could want in a player, Brian
Dozier.
He can
do a Rubik's Cube.
And he can do a Rubik's Cube in like 3 minutes or something crazy. I mean, he is an absolute baseball savant, and he is a beast. You guys would love him out there.
Yeah, I don't see why they wouldn't, and that's kind of sounds like a guy who'd be a perfect fit for this clubhouse.
Yeah. Anyway, well, we've gone over time, promised. You got to get you back to work. But really appreciate you coming on. Dustin Nosler of Dodgers Digest. Follow him on Twitter, Dustin Nosler, Nosler. Make sure you tell Dodgers Digest we did this so we can get some more of those page views, all right?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Thanks. Yeah. Good luck if you guys get Dozier.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks.
So that was Dustin Nosler of Dodgers Digest. Really enjoyed having him on. Promised to keep him on to the top of the hour. Took him a couple minutes over, but
a lot to say.
A lot to say and a lot to get to, and we had a lot of fun with it as well. Tom, you've probably been monitoring these winter meetings, maybe not quite as closely as I have, but I've been following them pretty closely. I think a lot of Twins fans are from the standpoint of seeing not only where Dozier goes, but how these new executives in Thad Levine and Derek Falvey put their stamp on this team.
Yeah.
What has been your takeaway First of all, from the steam coming out, and what would you like to see before everybody comes home on Thursday?
Yeah, so a couple thoughts. First, just really specifically, it'd be interesting. It'd be an interesting move to send Dozier, who is kind of enjoying the clubhouse, seems good with the young players, I think saw the value in mentorship because I think Josh Willingham was a really big influence on him. And it was funny that they kind of, they were like 45 minutes apart, right? You remember, I don't know if you ever saw the Twins features they did where they'd go hunting together and stuff.
Oh, yeah, or whatever.
But yeah, back home. But really nice guy. I really liked him ever since he came up. He kind of was the underdog. And I think still kind of, I remember him talking to the Ringer maybe 2 weeks ago, just speaking generally about how Southern Miss guy, eighth round pick, went to this kind of crazy agricultural high school or whatever.
Yesterday the post that I had was his first big league hit was our image on the top, which was cool to see how his swing has evolved, how his hair has evolved, how his body
shape
has evolved.
Amazing.
How everything has evolved. I think the stubble game, personally, is a plus.
No, but I mean, you just couldn't find a, you know, like a nicer guy and a better story. And then you're going to Puig, who I always found interesting. And again, maybe a change of scenery shakes things up, but is not considered a clubhouse guy. Also, Brian Dozier, you kind of know what you're getting. I think teams are smart enough to realize he's probably a 25 home run hitter that hit 42 last year, right? But that he, you know, has evolved as a player, as you pointed out a while ago. He was struggling in high A as an overager, right? A guy who was drafted in his senior year because I think he was injured his junior year. But regardless, I mean, there is kind of the clubhouse thing. If I had to put my money on it, I think he remains a Twin, especially given that I think they want to give Jorge Polanco a chance, even with the, kind of the arm strength issues and stuff like that. But in either way, there's no guarantee Jorge Polanco is really ready to go at any point, right? He's shown promise. But Brian Dozier is a known commodity that they owe, what, $15 million to over the next 2 years, right? Something like that.
Yeah, it sounds right.
And then I think generally just because we can track kind of the front office moves they've made through the winter meetings as they kind of reconfigure everything, I do appreciate that they're not just torching everything because I actually think the core of the Twins is good. And I know this is when I go out to bars and stuff and tell people this, they're like, ah, oh, you know, where do you get this idea from? But you and I have both met Darren Johnson, and I think you're very familiar with the front office, certainly talking to guys like Mike Berardino, who's objective, right? I mean, a Florida-based guy who covered the Marlins, he knows the league as a whole.
But has no reason to sugarcoat anything because it's not like this is his home market or hasn't been.
No, exactly. I kind of look at it, and I go, I think the core is actually good. I think Terry Ryan, who I just got a job with Philadelphia, I believe.
Mm-hmm. In the Andy McPhail.
Yeah, exactly. Still has a scouting acumen. I think he lost his edge with trades and understanding kind of how to manipulate the market and at the very least get, you know, what he needs for the Twins out there. And I'm just curious. There's a lot of players that need to change the scenery. I think Bernanke's probably gone in part because Buxton wasn't hitting and Sano wasn't hitting as well as he should. Joe Mauer either is going to probably put up this year or they're going to probably have to eat money and kind of launch him next year. I mean, I don't know what they're going to do if he just continues to hit 260, 270 and roll into 4-3 plays. And at the same time, I think he's a classic. He'll go somewhere else and become a 330 hitter because that's what happens in Minnesota. You know, the Minnesota sport curse or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Kyle Gibson, it'd be great to have a strong number three pitcher. He's a guy who's gone from, I thought he was going to go right to the major leagues, right? Star in college and seemed to be kind of projecting that way. Year two, you thought he'd be kind of this major league guy. Goes through Tommy John surgery and now has become kind of a nibbler. You know, can you get through to him so that he's attacking the strike zone a little more? And he doesn't go through five innings where he's just cruising and then, was it in Boston? No, he actually does well against Boston.
Boston was the game, I think, where he threw like a nine-inning shutout or a complete
game. And then the next outing, he's kicking water bottles and stuff because all of a sudden in the sixth inning, he just comes apart. You know, what do you do with Trevor May? Some of these guys who I think have upside and, again, maybe could use a breath of fresh air. And it'd be nice if Felvey and Levine, without, again, completely blowing up the front office, can create a change of scenery so that these players don't go and undergo a change of scenery in a different market. And then we all go, wow, that's weird that Joe Mauer, at career, he's still above 300 hitter, right? Mm-hmm. Went to New York and became a 330 hitter that gets on base 40% of the time.
Yeah, my hope is that they will be able to uncover things in existing players. A friend of mine had reached out and asked about Cole Stewart being the next Corey Kluber. And there are some signs there because Kluber, at the time that he was acquired by the Indians, was like a 4.6 AAA ERA pitcher.
Yeah.
Not as many strikeouts. Plenty of grounders, but not as many strikeouts as you'd like, more walks than you'd like, higher whip than you'd like. It's about uncovering what's already in there. And I like the idea that you should identify the Corey Klubers on other teams. What I think is getting missed right now is finding those in the Twins organization and magnifying them. And I think that that could be Cole Stewart. It could make Steven Gonsalves from a number five into a number three or a number two. It could be the reason why Fernando Romero, who may not be that far away based on his age, based on where he's been in recovery from the arm surgery he had a couple years ago, could be the high ceiling guy that they had hoped. And don't forget, if they can unlock anything with Jose Berríos. And the big thing that I come back to there is, since 2000, Berríos has like the number four highest ERA for a single season over, I think it was like 50 innings or 40 innings.
Yeah.
And one of those pitchers on that list was Roy Halladay. But he had to go back to A-ball
right.
and remanufacture.
I mean, that's a crazy story.
Yeah. And so I think that I think if they can just keep things in-house moving forward, you're going to have a situation where things will naturally progress and evolve without needing to put that huge stamp on it. Now, with that said, I do think there's going to be opportunity, whether it's the rest of this week or the rest of this winter, where I do believe there is going to be some kind of move. I don't know if it's firing the arrow across the bow or anything like that, where, yeah. hey, we're shaking this up because we're not happy with how Eddie Rosario played last year. We're not as high on Max Kepler, Byron Buxton. Like, flip Byron Buxton for someone else's top pitching prospect or something. Like, I could still see that.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a need to do it from a... You know how football fans like Rex Ryan, a very demonstrative coach?
Right.
Even though there's no proof that that makes you a better coach?
No, it's a great hire, not
like
a... Yeah.
They like to see what's going on. They didn't like Leslie Frazier because he was a mellow guy on the sidelines.
Yeah.
They like that fiery deal. People want to see that fiery trade to show your influence, to show that you
Although,
are the man. Now, with that said... With a trade, I think it's a little different. It's not as much window dressing as it is the actual moving of assets, the actual thing that matters. I just don't think you need to have that kind of ego from the outset. And I don't think they have that, but I think it would make sense for them to identify a player who is available. Holy smokes, Ken Rosenthal just said that Chris Sale's been traded to the Red Sox.
Yeah, so I have a friend who's an Orioles fan who's fretting all this. But I mean, the White Sox, I think you guys mentioned this a couple minutes ago. They've had to blow up their team for like 3 years now. So I, you know, as much as the rich are getting richer here with Boston getting a great lefty like Sale, who's one of my favorite players in Major League Baseball, at a very reasonable price, right? They don't pay him much for what he's...
They're getting Yoán Moncada too, which is huge.
Yeah, so I mean, Boston and New York, with the moves New York made, as much as I don't want to admit it, those two teams I think are scaling up, right? And probably one of those guys are going to look at, you know, like a Bryce Harper or someone and be like, hey, could we, you know, get a coup and spend $400 million on a player? But regardless, I had a couple thoughts with what you said. The dramatic move, yeah, you have to look at it multiple different ways, but Patrick Racy had a column recently where he says they should swap Thibodeau and Molitor, or kind of their coaching styles. And I see the expression on your face. The issue I have there is I actually think Tom Thibodeau works in part because of his bulldog style, because I think he kind of just imposes
he's
his...
He's the angry penguin on the sidelines.
I mean, he's hilarious.
This one guy's like, holy cow, I've been trying to figure out what he is.
Yeah.
He's the angry penguin.
No, and he... I will say this, however. People would be surprised how much Tom Thibodeau is like outside of the court. Him and Mulder are not very different, honestly. Mulder, I always thought, is very thoughtful, is very over himself in the sense that he's not saying, well, I was a great player, so everything I say is gold or whatever. Or if anything, he wants to avoid that conversation, which I think is to his credit. And Thibodeau is the same way. Like, he describes basketball in a very academic sense and is very measured with what he says. And I've even seen little moments here at practice where he pulls aside an Andrew Wiggins, who would get eaten alive if he was treated the way Thibodeau treats like referees, basically, in the NBA. I think he understands he has to treat Towns and Wiggins and Levine all differently. The reason why I don't like this kind of bulldog, you know, mentality is baseball is a long season, and it really is a game of precision. It's not football where you're imposing your will when you're on the line, or it's not basketball where you're driving to the basket and trying to knock over a player on your way or whatever. I think, you know, going to the rim with authority or whatever. With baseball, it really is kind of getting over constant mental hurdles, right? You're not hitting that game. Can you go 1-for-4 in a game that you struck out 3 times or something like that?
I think you have to be a psychologist to be a baseball manager.
And he is in some ways. I think Molitor is. Now, there's some X's and O's stuff I kind of worry about because he has done some moves from even me, and I'm sure you and Berardino see more. You know, I'm like, huh, that's weird that he's not running boxing on that player. It's weird how he aligned the outfield or whatever. But
or batting Kurt Suzuki 5th.
Right. I mean, that's a little...
Or DHing Kurt Suzuki.
Perplexing. Yeah, right. So... there's some of that that's of concern, but related to that, I think Molitor could be the solution. I think that it's nice to give him a year. It's smart to give him a year to kind of figure that out for Falvey and Levine. I think the other thing too is some of those dramatic trades, you know, win the press conference, win the off season, and end up hurting you in the long run. I actually like the deals of bringing back guys like Kadir and Hunter, as we said last time, because Hunter can boost morale, and Kadir can set a tone for what is expected of major league players. If you are going to make a dramatic move, the guy I'd consider is Miguel Sano, who I think can probably hold down third base until he turns 30, right? And then he's probably a DH, in which case, don't just trade him away. You might trade away Ortiz like you did years ago, but I mean, maybe that's the move, but I don't think you're selling high, and I really like the idea of that power bat. And I think with Buxton, I think he's a star literally unless he just can't hit, which I still think he can. His minor league numbers show that he can. He had much better minor league numbers than, say, Aaron Hicks, right?
Right.
And I think the issue is they got to figure out what they're doing in center field so that he doesn't keep on running into that fence, because that just seems like a hazard waiting to happen. And then the second thing, too, is just the hazard of the game. He could run into a heavily padded, very safe area, get concussed, and then he's not the same player. So, I mean, aside from that, it's just Buxton's shown enough of that freak athleticism that his speed probably can carry him until his bat, you know, is ready for major league pitch.
Have you started to think about what else the Twins need to target in terms of a finished product?
Right.
I'm gonna work on a piece. I'm gonna tease this because I think it's gonna get a lot of traffic. I think it's gonna get a lot of play. It might galvanize how people feel about me as an analyst, but I do see this as an 80-win team next year. And I know that's going to give me some heat because it'll seem like I'm trying to get people to click when, in fact, I truly believe...
It's a Matt Trueblood article, right?
Well, yeah. It's, you know, it's getting people talking. You know, it's just a deal where I do think this team is... You know, it's basically the same team that won 83 games, I guess technically 2 seasons ago now. I see a team that let too many wins fall through the cracks for it to be conventional analysis where you're thinking, how are you going to get 21, 22 wins better, when I see wins being plucked out of the margins by perhaps a manager who learns more in his third year, framing for existing pitchers who were very, very bad and have significant room to improve. As far as, you know, Kyle Gibson could be a solid number 3. He wasn't even a number 5 last year. I think there's so much to gain from Jose Berríos. There's so much to gain.
I mean,
gain.
I think Phil Hughes could be better next year.
There's so much to gain within those margins that just gets kind of combed over in traditional sabermetric analysis that I just think this is a very talented team from a base standpoint. If you look at each of their positions, you have a feel that there is somebody installed who can hold their own. And where they're lacking, there's help on the way, or a move very easily could be made. Left field, shortstop, if a Dozier deal gets made.
That's what I was going to say.
Eduardo Escobar is 1 year removed from being a very, very
solid player.
He seemed
hurt last year. I don't know what his deal was. But
beyond being hurt and missing time from a couple of different injuries, I believe, he didn't play all that frequently down the stretch. He didn't play, I don't think, one position very frequently, moved between third, third, second. He was all over. I do believe that there's a very good chance that this team will be markedly better next year. So what do you add to that? Now, again, it's easy to look at the service and say add pitching. There's not an obvious fit. They weren't going to sign Rich Hill, who I think was always destined to go back to the Dodgers. They're not going to sign Ivan Nova, who is basically probably the best starter on the market now.
Yeah, there's not a lot of pitchers.
Yeah, you know, might get 5 years and $75 million. But there are pitchers out there that I really like. There's going to be natural connections to Texas pitchers, whether it's Colby Lewis, who the Twins actually missed out on signing when he came back from overseas. He's been with Texas at least twice. I don't think it was three times. But there's been a they were in the mix for him to begin with. Again, it's a new regime, but Thad Levine is obviously going to have some familiarity with him. There was one other Texas pitcher. Derek Holland is going to be on the market as well. There's going to be
Lewis is 37.
Yeah. You know, it's going to be one of those temporary deals. Between deals where
two stints for him, by the way, in Texas.
Okay, yeah. If he needs you know what I'm thinking? He had two stints plus a major injury. I think that's why it seemed like three. The Cleveland connection that I keep coming back to, and you might not know much about him, but I'll just throw out there, is TJ House. I tweeted about him last night while I was trying to fall asleep and couldn't. Probably technically this morning. But this is a guy who has a career 60% ground ball rate, was taken off the 40-man roster, pitched very poorly in 2015 before he was injured, has barely pitched in the big leagues. But if you look at his 2014, pretty good strikeout rate. I think it was like 7 strikeouts per 9. 1.2, 1.9, something like that, walks per 9. I guess that's a big range. It was under 2 walks per 9. And 60% ground ball rate. That's basically who you dream of Kyle Gibson becoming. But left-handed and with at least 3 years of control, it just, to me, there's too much of a Falvey connection. The fantasy guys, Eno Saris and all the guys at Rotographs, really liked him going into 2015. I just think there's too good of a fit there from a cheap standpoint to get a possible number 4, number 3, yeah, probably more number 4 or 5. I really like Aaron Barrett, who I had on the blueprint I did for Cold Omaha about 2 weeks ago, where he's a guy that threw really hard. The Nationals took him off the 40-man. They outrighted him. But I believe he would have at least 3, if not 4, years of control left. He's coming back from, you know, major arm surgery. But when he was right, threw very hard, very good reliever. And again, taking a chance on a guy who's got a high ceiling, a very low floor, but there's not that much risk. And again, if it pans out, like if Abad had panned out to the point where they wanted to keep him, and again, there wasn't a ton of sense in keeping him, they had years of control beyond. You know, it's not signing a guy to a 1-year deal.
Yeah.
And then have, you know, Kinsler, Buddy Boshears, right. You know, those guys, if they didn't pan out, could easily be let go. But Boshears, I think, has 4 or 5 years of control.
Yeah, you wrote about him for the site recently.
You know, so it's a deal where any time that that you can get somebody where the upside so much outweighs the downside, I think it just makes a ton of sense to go and get those guys. And, you know, I think he's just got a higher ceiling than the Boshears of the world, who I really like. I'm higher on Boshears than most.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I think you're right. It starts internally. We didn't even mention that Mejia guy who's 23.
Adalberto lefty. Mejia.
Yeah. Going back to the original premise of what they kind of need, I think we're getting at with the pitching, high-end pitching, because they seem to have enough talent to fill out a staff, assuming that, like, more than half the guys pan out, right? I mean, whether it's younger guys like Insalvis or Cole Stewart or guys like Phil Hughes and Kyle Gibson, I think they probably do need that ace at some point, and I don't know if that comes from within the system or that's something where they take a big risk, which case we'll kind of know what the Polat's gumption to spend money is after a widely panned Mauer contract.
Well, the talk that Terry never spent to his limit.
Right, and I'm still, I don't want to open up the Pandora's box about Mauer's contract, but regardless, I was always of the mindset that they're willing to spend if they give something, the management gives them something to spend on. There's really not much to spend on right now.
And the market has not been really...
I mean, Jeff Passan went over this. The free agents almost get paid more for what they did than what they're supposed to do, right?
Yeah, well, and there hasn't been a transcendent talent willing to come to Minnesota that would have put this team over the hump.
Now, right.
when the Twins were good. You have to keep in mind, too, there's only been one good Twins team in Target Field. 2010.
Right.
You can say 2015 was good, but they were an 83-win club.
Yeah, 94 wins in 2010.
Yeah,
big difference.
So there's and when that happened, they had, you know, Jim Thome.
Right.
They had Michael Kadire in position to play first base when Justin Morneau got hurt. They didn't need to go out and make a move because they had
depth.
Yeah,
you know, God Denard's forbid.
They had so.
No. That's right. And they did spend money when they first opened up Target Field. I think there was some growing pains too.
When you've never spent that money before.
Well, and 2011 was proof that really one bad season shouldn't mean 12 and 13 get train wrecked, and they did.
They got trucked.
I mean, well, there were a lot of cracks underneath the surface. I think that no one saw until all of a sudden they were like, wow, you know, like, this team's going to be bad for five of the next 6 years. But regardless, I think, look, if the Twins really develop everything but a shortstop, let's say, and a high-end pitcher, I got to imagine people would come here, right? Because they'd go, look, I'm just the missing piece. And we just, you know, this team needs a shortstop. The other thing, too, is Eddie Rosario a everyday outfielder on a winning team?
For me, he's not. And I've said it on Twins Daily as well. And I've gotten... I wouldn't say grilled, but...
I mean, he has so much upside, but he's so inconsistent. The reason why I believe in Max Kepler is it seems like what he did when he was at his best...
He's polished.
...is sustainable.
He's got...
I mean, just a great swing and...
Discipline.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think an outfield of Kepler and left, Buxton in center, and Puig in right would be badass.
It'd be sweet as long as you just don't torture clubhouse like that. And regardless, that's another player...
But Trace Thompson would be great. Andrew Toles... Who would have 5 or 6 years of control? Again,
is there anyone in the system? I'm trying to remember who their best outfielder.
For that, it's Verdugo, but and Bellinger.
Sorry, within the Twin system.
Not really. Daniel Palka is someone that people kind of like.
I mean, he's raking, right, in the minors?
Well, he had a .294 on base when he got promoted to AAA, so there's severe questions. Keith Law told me that he's got a better big league future than Adam Brett Walker, who's now been claimed twice. He's gone to the Baltimore Orioles now as well. He told me he's got a better big league future than that, but I don't see a big league starter in there. And then beyond that, nobody jumps off the page at you. Until you get to Kirilov, way down at the bottom.
So yeah, I mean, I guess my thought is you probably eventually would need to plug at shortstop until Nick Gordon, I guess, would be kind of available.
Yeah. So I'm pulling up the Twins' top 30 prospects on MLB.com. As far as outfielders, you got Kirilov at number 4.
Who's been successful at his 18.
He's 4 years away. Palka at 19. Travis Harrison at 24. Akil Baddoo at 25. He was drafted this last year. Lamont Wade, 27th. And that's it. So, no, not much in the way of outfield. I think Eddie Rosario, even if you don't want to shoehorn him in as a number 4 outfielder, if you go get Puig, you buy yourself a window where you can have Eddie Rosario as your 4th, forcing your hand to play him frequently, backing those guys up, and getting himself back into the mix as a starter by the time Puig's contract expires. Because you got probably at least 5 or 6 more years of Buxton, 5 or 6 more years of Kepler, assuming things don't happen. Again, 5 years ago, what was the Twins' outfield?
Right.
It was Ben Revere, it was Denard Span, and Delman Young, probably. Kubel. It would have been the first era of Kubel.
Yeah.
Kadire.
Yeah.
Actually, the Trevor May trade was 4 years ago today.
Really?
I found that on my looking back on Facebook, which was kind of funny, and then I tweeted it. It's funny. 5 years, anything can happen. But I really do think that it would make sense to move. And if your bench looks like... where you have Rosario and Grossman on it, I'm okay with that. Because it probably means they move on from Danny Santana, who, again, someone might be able to turn him into something somewhere else. I just don't
think
it's
going to... But Escobar's a better version of him, right?
Yeah, I think I would roll with a bench if you're going 4 deep. You could do a bench of John Ryan Murphy, Eduardo Escobar, Robbie Grossman,
And Murphy, I forget. Murphy's another player who probably needs even though he had to change his senior gun from New York to Minnesota, he could use a revamp here in Minnesota.
I think what's going to happen is he's going to play against lefties because Jason Castro can't hit lefties. Jason Castro can hit righties, and they're both good pitch framers. And so I think what the vision here is that they're trying to create, through a platoon, a poor man's Russell Martin, or a poor man, or a similar situation to Francisco Cervelli in Pittsburgh, where you've got a transcendent defensive catcher, but they're piecing together the offense. Now, I don't know for sure that John Ryan Murphy can hit lefties. We don't know if he can hit anybody based on what we saw this last year. However, he's a right-handed hitter, so natural fit with Castro. And he homered off Glenn Perkins back at Target Field back in his Mariners Yankees. So we know he's got it in him to hit lefties. And you know, maybe you just throw away this season. Because you look at his career big league numbers, it wasn't like 50 at-bats where he had a 7-something OPS.
Well, the guy we had, Mike Exisa or whatever?
Yeah.
He said he thought he was an everyday player. That's a New York guy.
Again, I think his slight build might play into the fact that maybe he can't hit for legit big league power. But Cervelli, for instance, the guy that I keep invoking the image of, last year slugged like 330 or something. You know, he had a down year. You don't expect a ton of power. If you got a guy that can get on base, I mean, Ryan Domit's bat alone, you know, if you strip away defense,
framing was
which
terrible.
Well, he was terrible all the way around as far as defense. But the bat for Domit, he didn't give you a ton of power. He might pop 12 to 15 home runs per year, but he had that 280, 350, 430, 440 bat. Those don't come along a catcher every single day. If the Twins can piece that together, they might have 3 or 4 wins by Fangraphs WAR behind the plate that they haven't seen something like that since Joe Mauer.
Yeah.
I mean, Joe Mauer was a 6 or 7 win player at his peak. They're not going to see that again. Maybe Ben Rortvedt will be that good. Mitch Garver's not going to be that good.
Yeah.
They might get it out of Rortvedt. He's their number 8 prospect on MLB.com right now. But he's a long ways off. You know, as a Wisconsin high schooler. I mean, Wisconsin has not had great high school players out of that state.
I think that's the only one I can think of.
Oh, man. The draft history for high schoolers out of Wisconsin is very, very poor. But what else you got? Well, if you're looking on the market, I could see them going after shortstop.
Yeah.
I
think that's a move you make after you prove that that's the missing piece. Because I think instead of half-assing that, you tell them, like you tell the Poets, this is the missing piece, go spend.
But I don't mean a starting shortstop necessarily as much as someone to push Escobar.
Right.
Maybe, you know, the name that a friend of mine keeps coming back to is Zach Cozart.
And a trade
for him from the Reds. I think he's only got 1 year of control, but he's got some pop, got some defense. Again, you want to maintain defensive integrity with so many balls in play with this pitching staff. You know, so it's a deal where, you know, you're going to have to you run the risk of really messing with your pitchers to have that infield. And that's why I think a Dozier deal still makes sense. Okay, before we close, who's closing for you next year?
It's such a good question. So
yeah, I mean, obviously, it's not going to be something that they're going to address as in free agency. I don't think.
No.
But is
Kinsler still on the roster?
So Kinsler got tendered a contract. He's going to be. They'll probably come to an agreement with him because the Twins have not been a file and trial team. Again, it's a new regime. But Rob Anthony's still in place. He did a lot of that arbitration stuff.
And Glenn Perkins is very unlikely he returns to what he was.
Soon. Not soon. If ever. Yeah. It's not going to be soon. I think he's going to maybe open the season on the 60-day DL as far as...
And so what... Maybe this is out there. Is Ryan Pressly?
That's my guy. That's the guy I keep coming back to. It's funny. His girlfriend follows me on Twitter. She's a Dallas Cowboys cheerleader.
Yeah, she follows me as well.
She actually tweeted a... Cold Omaha the other day.
He's a really nice guy. I don't know what she's like, but
she ended up reading the report card that I did on him.
Yeah,
and I was very.
And he's cheap, right? 1.5 mil or something.
Yeah. Well, and I was very complimentary of him just because I think he's a great pitcher. I think. You know, he's a righty with 97 mile power fastball, good curveball, good change, good curveball, good slider. So I think that he's going to be a factor for them in the bullpen next year. I think he's my pick. I think Chaguas is going to be in the mix.
He's another guy who maybe could use a change of scenery, right?
He obviously was bad to start, but then his September was great. So I think,
and he has the velocity, right? It's kind of
absolutely.
What his other,
So I think you're looking at a team that
Pressly just doesn't seem phased. Like I've just never seen him kind of.
He's Texan, man. He's Texan. Yeah, he's hashtag Texan.
Right.
I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how it pans out. I think I think it's going to be
where I think you got to make Trevor May a starter, and if it doesn't work out, maybe do a more long relief role or something.
Yeah, the Andrew Miller role. Well, if you're listening to this and you have takes, hashtag takes, feel free to tweet either one of us or @ColdOmahaMN. We'll be happy to hear, happy to get some questions on the show if people have them. But you've been listening to Midwest Swing, part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network.